out of prison and with an eye for revenge. This is Lethal Heat. Force Impact.
Welcome to episode 2 of Lethal Heat Force Impact.
Woo!
Or Full Hard on Death Force.
Yes, Full Hard on Death Force. And you know, we're gonna have to turn this into like a show that we do 4 times a day. Because ever since this started, we keep getting like emails and posts and everything from people going, "Oh, you got to do an episode on this. You got to do an episode on this. You got to do an episode." Yes, I want to do them all. I want to do an episode completely devoted to Chuck Norris, Steve McQueen, and every guy who knew martial arts in between 1983 and 1991.
However,
give it time.
We'll get around to it. Yeah.
Well, you want to do another 100 episodes, don't you?
Yeah.
That's the voice of Johnny you're hearing. Johnny is joining us today along with Aaron.
Hello.
Of Whorehound Magazine fame. Yes. And also of, I think that he cut some guy's dick off and threw him in a vat of acid once.
Oh, yeah. You know. Made soap out of him.
Don't forget, stuck it in his mouth before he did it,
too.
Yeah. Genitals and all.
It's ironic that we're doing this again today because, I decided that today would be the annual Fight Club celebration for me. I love Fight Club. And at least once a year, I watch the movie or I read the book.
But you're not supposed to talk about it.
Yeah, it's the first rule, you idiot.
You fucked up.
Broke the rules.
It's also
already.
The second rule.
All right, we're going to have to shut down and beat his ass right now.
Yeah.
All right.
Taking him out. So today... we're talking about a movie that comes highly recommended by Aaron. I'm glad that he brought this into my life.
Yeah.
Yeah, obscure film.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a lot of beautiful hair in this movie.
Yes. It really is.
And blue eyes.
A lot of beautiful people.
Yeah, I was looking at your notes and you mentioned that every single person in the movie has blue eyes.
Yeah. It's,
and I really don't think that was a design choice on their part, but I do think it's odd that every single person in it had blue eyes. Yeah.
So if anyone hasn't figured it out yet, we're going to be talking about Rico, a.k.a. Mean Machine, a.k.a. Cauldron of Death, or A Juiste de Suentes.
Or Ganglin.
Ganglin, or The Dirty Mob. Or Tipo con uno faccia strana ti sersa per usinderti? I mean, that's one of the titles was that entire phrase.
Really?
So this has also been retitled. I don't know how many times. It's unreal. But there's some... was this a Spanish movie filmed in Italy or an Italian movie filmed by a Spanish director? I don't know how we would classify it.
I never figured that out either.
Yeah, I mean...
Mitchum said it sounded like it was a Spanish movie filmed in Rome.
Yeah, he said he was huge in Spain, so...
He lived in Spain for 3 years or something doing these types of movies.
That's because he hung out with John Wayne and he kind of got blacklisted by people who were anti-war, against the Vietnam War, because some things John Wayne had said about that. And so he, the son of Robert Mitchum, Christopher Mitchum, went overseas to get work.
So let's do a synopsis of this film. So we have Rico, and there's a little backstory to Rico that they clue you in on. His father had a run-in with a drug lord named Don Vito, and his father ended up dying, and Rico ended up going to prison.
2 years.
Don Vito.
Yeah, yes. For attacking Don Vito. So it's 2 years. He's come back. He doesn't really want revenge at this point. You know, he just wants to live his life. He's cool.
Happy-go-lucky, kind of.
He's happy-go-lucky. His family does not agree. They think that he should go out and get that revenge.
But he wants to go out and get Rosa's punani.
Yeah. Don Vito also managed to shack up with Rico's girlfriend, Rosa, while he was in prison. And he tries to track her down and finds out that she's with Don Vito and, you know, tries to get himself a little taste.
think he kind of wants to see if she's into Don Vito or if she's kind of captive or
trying to see if she was sort of, you know, if this is where she wants to be, sort of give her the out.
It takes some doing to find what happened to Rosa.
Yeah, and he runs into some of Vito's men over the course of...
Well, everyone is Vito's man in Rome, apparently.
Yeah.
Like, they have their fingers in. They counted when there's a scene where they track around Vito's muscle when they're collecting money from business owners. They go to 15 different businesses in the little itty-bitty metropolitan area of Rome. So pretty much everybody is paying protection money to Don Vito.
He's a big crime boss. He's a big crime boss. But during this time, he also runs into an old friend of his who was a forger, and his daughter, who is taken up sort of a con artist role.
Barbara Boucher.
You mean the cousin. Rosa. Yeah, Rosa was...
Cousin. Yeah. No. I'm talking about Barbara Boucher.
Barbara Boucher is Rosa's cousin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The character that she plays is the... Well, her father's the artist who forges the lira, and... His niece, Barbara Boucher's character, who I'm trying to get her name. I can't seem to find it.
It's Skilla?
That sounds right. Sure. Yeah. We'll go with Skilla.
Yeah. Also, there we go. Also, Barbara Boucher looks disturbingly like Giada De Laurentiis.
I wouldn't say it's Food disturbing. Network. She was incredibly hot. Actually, all the women in this movie, except for Mariko's mom.
There is so much incredible hotness, and they all have sweet boobs, and they're all naked a lot.
Yeah, so it's pretty great.
But no, so at first it seems like they're sort of getting revenge, but it's much more like it's not vicious. You know, they steal that money that the guys had been collecting from people using. Basically, Skilla gets naked, and while they're staring dumbfounded, Rico throws them into a lake, and they make off with the money.
Yeah. Very hot. Strips.
Oh yes,
the dance on the hood.
Yeah. She's got this awesome stripper boots on.
Yeah, she's doing the boots. Dance on the hood. Your little mind's going, here I go again on my own. But no, Don Vito, being the crime boss that he is, he responds violently. He has a tendency to make people into soap.
I just want to point out very odd thing I noticed watching this the second time was that the scene where he's punishing these two guys for losing the money.
Yeah.
Their heads are being slammed against this wall. And if you notice the wall.
Yeah, it's pictures of naked women. Yeah. I was talking to Freddie about it. I was like, "That if I'm going to get punished, that's how I want to get punished. I want to get hit in the face with naked women over and over again."
That's even weirder is. Naked women. Right. Yeah. But what's strange is this is obviously his room where he melts down people. There's this this big bathtub type, thing.
The cauldron of death.
Yeah, the cauldron of death, if you will. And they're decorating it with posters of naked chicks because, it's something to look at while you're melting people, I guess.
Look, during the course of this, he put a lot of people in that.
He
vat.
Did, so they're
He's
pretty
down
busy.
There a lot. I'd make it a little homey too.
And he, as a result,
it's like a locker room, but it's the nudie calendar at the mechanics.
A couple pictures of Giada up there.
Sure.
I gotta dump people in there 2-3 times a day.
Those guys were both wearing like jogging pants when he threw them in there too. Yeah. It's like he made them strip down to just jogging pants. They were wearing suits the rest of the movie, He's like, get in some jogging pants and meet me at the Cauldron of Death.
But no,
this can't be good.
Don Vito,
we're going jogging.
Don Vito responds by pretty much killing Rico's entire family.
When he realizes that he gets kind of sold out by the bar owner where Rosa used to work. As part of tracking down Rosa, he runs into this guy who... everybody used to be in the employ of Rico's father.
Yeah.
Before he was killed. Don Vito took over this syndicate.
Yeah, he took over even the family's assets, hence why Rico's mother and, his sister seems pretty happy just fucking her,
They run a gas station that's never open because they're too busy
fucking.
People
are always ringing, car bells and trying to get attention, but... And the mother seems, really unhappy because she went from living like a queen to living in somewhat of squalor, I guess.
She sits in her wheelchair drinking Jim Beam all day.
Yeah, she's kind of pissed. Yeah.
Kind of like my mom.
things have gotten a little screwed up for... I mean, of course, Rico's coming out of jail or school, as they call it in the movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
You just get out of school.
Yeah. The cops were awful friendly with him, too.
I don't have to tell you.
I know, and the cops were super nice, man. I want Italian cops.
Hey, you just got out. We're going to give you a ride.
Yeah, you want
to
ride in
You're not going street? Back to the... I thought he was getting arrested again.
Don't I remember you from... Don't I remember you from prison? Do you need a ride down the street?
You want
to
know what I took from that scene is that they knew who he was. They knew he used to be the former Don's son.
Oh,
is
yeah.
why I think that their, oh, yeah. that exchange happened.
Yeah.
And why they gave him a ride is because maybe they kind of thought, well, you know what? He was a better Don, maybe. You kind of give you the impression that he was a scumbag, the dad was, but he was better than Don Vito.
Yeah. And there's always the scene, too, at the beginning where it's kind of a little foreshadowing where Rico sees his dad and his dad kind of tells him that, you know, he wants him to be more like him, more cutthroat. And Rico's like, you know, kind of hip and that I'll do my own thing. And
yeah. And, you know, you mentioning that, you know, it's obvious that he was the crime boss before. I mean, that's a trope that shows up in action movies a lot, too. The, you know, the guy before was a crime boss, too. But he was a good guy.
Right. He was a fair crime boss.
Yeah, yeah.
He didn't throw people in vats of hot wax.
Yeah.
He sold drugs, but only to bad people.
Not to school children. Yeah, like in The Godfather.
Yeah.
I sell this crap at schools. No, but this movie confused me a bit. The scene in particular that you were just talking about, Aaron, mm-hmm. where he's at the warehouse talking to his father.
Mm-hmm. And then he leaves and his father, I guess, called down to have the, you know, his men working in the warehouse to beat the shit out of his son, kind of toughen him up, I guess.
Yeah.
And we come to find out that Rico's proficient in Kenpo karate all of a sudden and whoops about what five guys asses.
Yeah, he beats the shit out of those guys. Yeah.
Well, it was all, given the time period, this was like what, 1970?
It was 1973.
Yeah, 1973. Yeah, yeah. Everybody knew Kenpo karate in movies.
It was
in
the year of Enter the Dragon.
Yeah. Elvis, Elvis Presley.
Yeah.
Was learning karate then too.
Yeah.
You know, like that scene though felt it was a flashback, but they don't clue you into that.
No,
so.
They don't. It's so kind of just
it's wedged in there.
Poorly.
Yeah, actually, I didn't know it until you guys were bringing it up now. I mean, I was still under the impression, like you were when we were watching it.
That it was his uncle? Together.
Yeah, that it was his uncle.
And he kept calling him dad. Yeah. And I was like, what the fuck is going on?
Yeah, pacing was not very good.
But. Yeah, the movie could have been recut.
And what kind of father is that? It's like, I wish you were tougher. So I hired some guy, you know, like...
And then he comes down to watch.
Yeah, you're working at a warehouse. Could you imagine that? You know, you're working at a warehouse, you're stacking the boxes, and the boss is like, I need to talk to you for a second. Brings you in. Two other guys. He's like, look, my son's kind of a panty waste. Could you kick his ass for me?
And they even apologize. They're like, you know, hey, he asked us to do this. We got to do it. He told us to do it. And they just start fighting. It's like,
he
sorry,
might
Rico.
Know Kenpo karate. I'm not
we
sure.
We don't know.
I like that, yeah. My father didn't count on one thing. You can't hurt me. But I can hurt you.
Exactly.
And I love that, man. And there was something like, he looked so young, Christopher Mitchum in this movie. I don't know how old he was, but I can tell you, man, like he just seemed like, I didn't know it was him when we first watched the movie. I didn't know it until the edition that we watched had the extra bonus on there where they interviewed him. I'm like, God, that guy looks like Robert Mitchum. And I'm like, Mitchum. I'm like, oh my God, it's Robert Mitchum's son.
Yeah.
You know, he looks so much more like his dad now.
Yeah.
But in this movie, I mean, like, he just looked like, I kept calling him Prince Adam. There's a couple of times.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. He really,
yeah,
he just,
he did have a little Prince Adam.
The blonde bowl cut.
Yeah. Yeah, he totally had a Prince Adam thing kicking around. But his sister was the other of the holy trinity of the blonde, the brunette, and the redhead in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Where you get, the casting director must have just wanted to nail chicks with three different hair colors, is all I'm saying.
Could be.
And they
I mean, a lot of those actresses, you know, they all came from a lot of other films, you know, a lot of giallo and stuff like that. So they were all kind of active in the...
They all came from great genetic stock.
Yeah, that too.
I mean, this movie could have been called One Karate Scene and a Bunch of Awesome Boobs.
Oh, yeah.
That was one of the alternate titles.
Yeah, Chizak was actually joking about my notes that I have to make because I have memory disorder, if you will.
Yeah.
And one of them was I had written on my notes not to forget to mention Amok. I don't know how many people have seen Amok. It's a giallo. And there's a really, really hot lesbian scene with Barbara Boucher in it. So,
well, I was double laughing, one, because you pointed that out, and two, because there's a typo, so it's a hot Lebo sex scene.
It's supposed to be Lesbo, damn it. I had like 10 minutes to write this.
Hot Lebo sex.
Hot Sheriff Lobo sex.
Lobo sex is hot.
Lobo. I really, really enjoyed this movie, though. I mean, like, I watched it twice. I watched it once with Mike, and then I watched it again because it had been, like, a couple of weeks since I'd seen it. I wanted to be fresh on it for the show. And I was like, the second time, this movie is one that sweetens with a repeated view.
Yeah, it is a very solid film. It doesn't come across too cheesy.
It felt worth the effort because we did have to go through a little bit of effort to watch this film. Freddie brought it over to my house, and you know, I have the big TV like Freddie does, but mine is downstairs. It's mainly used for the Xbox. So we put it in the Xbox. Xbox won't read it. I'm like, okay, I bring my laptop downstairs, we hook it up to the television, spend like an hour and a half trying to adjust the resolution so it'll cover the entire TV and not this tiny little chunk, because the resolution on my TV is so much higher than my laptop. We're wasting our time because the computer won't read the disc.
I have the same problem. We're about to
chalk it up as a loss, and Erica's like, you know, you can watch it on the DVD player up here. We're like, it's not going to work. It didn't work on the laptop. It didn't work on the Xbox. We pop it in, and finally it works.
I just had to clean mine off. It was so dirty that...
covered in all kinds of tummy fingerprints.
Yeah, it was the flashback scene. That's how I realized it was a flashback scene, because it started skipping at the flashback scene. And I'm like, what's going on? And so I had to stop it twice, change two different DVD players, had to put it under the sink and wipe it off with water and put it back in and started it right at the flashback scene. I'm going, oh, I know what this is. And it's like his dad, you know, the beginning of the movie, his dad's dead.
Right.
I mean, he gets taken out like first 5-10 minutes.
Yeah.
And the only part my girlfriend watched, she was like, oh, that's gross, and just walked out of the room.
The violence and gore in this film, there are two scenes that stand out above everything else, and one of them is the assassination of the original Don. Giuseppe, I think, maybe. Is that right?
Yeah.
Where he takes a bullet right to the face, and it cuts to your Italian horror type of prosthetic head where the eyeball's blasted away, the orbital cavity's like gone, and blood's just kind of trickling
out. That's the insult from what Rico says, is, you know, he's not upset that his father was killed so much as the fact that they went up and shot him point blank in the face, so that, I guess, so he can have the open casket funeral, so to speak.
Yeah, the mom couldn't almost like identify him or something.
Yeah.
Well, that was, she said that was the only way she could imagine him now, was with his face blown away.
Right.
And also, Rico had no interest in anyone else involved. He said he only wanted the person who did the coup de grace.
Right, and that's throughout the film, he's constantly trying to beat that out of people as who actually pulled the trigger.
Yeah.
Because they don't show it. I mean, they really don't show who it is, and you can suspect who it is.
There's three people shooting at his dad.
Yeah, there's like people shooting at his dad, and his dad's popping these guys off, and then all of a sudden he just gets hit, and that's it.
Shot in the back, right?
Yeah. Yeah, the one guy comes up behind him over the hood of the car and just pops him, and then somebody walks up, shoots him right in the face, and it's like, you know, you hear a voice, but you're like, it might be that guy, it might not be that guy.
I never had a doubt in my mind that it was Don Vito. I mean, it just seemed so...
I just want to say, too, that Don Vito is played by Arthur Kennedy.
Yeah, I never said...
I don't know, you know, this is probably, for me, I didn't know this until literally today, that Arthur Kennedy was the inspector in Let Sleeping Corpses Lie, or The Living Dead at Manchester Morgue. And he is... he's a great actor.
He's another really American expatriate too, isn't he? Like, I mean, he's someone else who moved during, I mean, that Vietnam War era to make films overseas, and that's kind of interesting that they made him and Mitchum play off of each other as kind of hero and villain.
He has one of my favorite lines in any film, which was in The Living Dead of Manchester Morgue. He actually meets up with the main character, and he says, "You're all the same, the lot of you, with your long hair and your faggot clothes. Drugs, sex, every sort of filth." It's just, I don't know, good stuff.
That's a great quote.
There was a thematic thing, too, that I kind of laugh to myself about, because Freddie, I know a lot of the action films that he's watched over the years has been American action films, and for the past couple of years, I've really been into to wuxia and the Chinese action films, and the end of this movie, it completely colored the way we looked at it, because you know, it's a spoiler, but action movies really aren't about the story anyway. Rico, in his quest for revenge, gets his revenge, but dies in the process. Mm-hmm. And Freddie was talking about how grim an ending that was, because he's used to American films. Whereas in the Chinese action films, which are largely created by the Cantonese, I mean, that's the most romantic thing, or the most heroic thing a person can do. As a matter of fact, if you watch most of the wuxia action films, the hero dies at the end, almost invariably.
Yeah.
Because that's what the hero does. That's the most heroic thing you can do, is die for your cause. And so when he dies in the middle of that, I almost felt like that was needed. You know, in a good revenge tale, it has to consume you completely,
mm-hmm.
to the point where you don't make it out.
Right. It's the morality tale. You know, you're just as guilty of killing as the people you're trying to kill. So shouldn't you,
That balance needs to be maintained.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And he didn't have anybody at the end.
And that's the other,
you know, Skilla, but he was just banging her to bang her.
Right. Pretty Skilla much. Was yeah. just kind of there. She was an afterthought.
But when they killed his family, that was it. Well, he was done.
You have a point in that too. I mean, you know, in a good solid revenge tale, I mean, you have to have nothing left to start going for that revenge.
Right, and right. Nothing to lose.
Once you get that revenge, there's no point you staying here.
Right. His family's no point dead.
You being part of the story anymore.
Yeah.
Well, they kind of give you that tinge of hope with Scylla or Skilla or whatever, Skillet, whatever you want to call her.
Skella.
Skeletor.
Skeletor. She represents like his plan B, or his other chance at leaving everything alone, you know, and just kind of moving on. You know,
and there's
what I mean?
Always like, got to be that. There's always got to be that way out.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, you can't be railroaded into a revenge tale. You have to be given the chance to walk away and not walk away.
Yep. Yeah, Johnny Handsome comes to mind with that one.
That's a good one. Haven't seen that in a long time.
But yeah, there's a funny line when Skilla tells Rico, she says, "I think I'm falling in love with you." And he goes, "Well, that's easy. Don't."
Yeah, exactly.
And that's kind of just how he feels about her, I guess.
Well, and he kind of seems like he knows that by the end of this, he's going to be dead.
Right? Yeah.
He knows that no matter what, somebody's going to get him, because he's going to get the boss.
Yeah.
And it's like, you know, any mob movie, anything like that, you kill the boss, you're dead eventually. Somebody's going to get you.
Yeah.
And it's just like, you know, the way that he goes out at the end, it's like, great, because he gets what he wants and, you know, he's happy. I say that for this movie, you know, unlike a lot of movies, the person at the end of it that gets their revenge is happy and dies happy. You know, it's like, but it's one of those things where he gets pushed into it like almost near the end of the movie. The whole movie is just him gallivanting around with Skilla, stealing money and having fun.
Yeah.
And it's like, until they kill Rosa, they kill his mom and his sister and his brother-in-law.
Then they made it personal.
Yeah, then they made it personal. Right. That's exactly what it is. They make it personal, and then he just sets it up. And he sets it up exactly, I mean, it's ironically that he's setting it up exactly like they set his dad up.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's just, circle. You know, yeah, it's like right where everything happened, and he just set it up.
Yeah.
Oh, go on, Freddie.
Well, I was just going to say, you had mentioned the scene they kill Rosa, you know, and that's one of the things that sends them over the edge, but they also kill Rosa's
bodyguard
lover. Yeah. And this is the second gruesome scene.
Yeah, let's talk about that scene.
Yes.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the guy. A couple guys get dumped into this vat.
Right, we talk about the jogging pants guys.
Yeah, where they make the soap. It happens a couple times in this movie. It's almost comical at some point.
The boss doesn't wash his hands with the soap because he knows what's in the soap. Yeah.
These guys, this guy, the guy that he catches sleeping with Rosa, he gets a special punishment.
Yeah, yes, no jogging pants on this guy.
Yeah, they drag his ass down naked.
Yeah.
cut his cock and balls off.
Well, they beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, they beat the shit out of him. Cut his cock and balls off.
They cut his cock and balls off. Like, three guys hold him down. Another guy grabs his schlong and balls in a nice big fist, pops out a switchblade, and saws right through him.
And it's very, very real looking.
Oh, my God. Like, everything before that, everything before this is that typical 1970s... like bucket quacket quacket quacket, you know, they're fighting with Kempo karate, and you know, I even think I heard some of those fake.
Yeah.
I thought of Austin Powers.
Seriously, I thought of Austin Powers.
You know, I've seen
Mike Myers has seen this movie because when he's fighting in the warehouse, it's judo chop.
Yeah, you know, the only difference between this one and most of the other movies that you saw of this flavor in the 1970s is the main character wasn't black.
Yeah.
You know, like Shaft, Cleopatra Jones.
Black Belt Jones.
Yeah, Black Belt Jones. All of these, like, had this kind of feel to it. Mm-hmm. And then this scene shows up, and you're like, holy shit, what movie am I watching? Because they show the guy's cock getting cut off and stuffed in his mouth before he gets thrown into this
vat. Did you see that coming at all?
No.
Did you? See, when I seen him, like, as soon as they flipped to that scene and he's fighting naked, and I thought, oh man, his dick's coming off. I thought, this guy's screwed.
I saw I could see something like that happening. But when they go for, like, the close-up of his... You know, they go for the close-up of his wedding tackle. It just... chop.
Wouldn't you have loved that to happen in, like, Borat when they were wrestling around naked in the hotel room? Like, if that Borat's buddy pulls out a switchblade and cuts off his dick.
But then to shove it in his mouth.
Yeah.
It's Italy, you know. Oh, you did the same thing to Mussolini pretty much, so...
Yeah, they did lots of Mussolini. Yeah, I mean, that's what I'm saying.
That's an Italy tradition.
Never fight naked in Italy.
No.
Your dick's coming off and going in your mouth.
So, yeah, I think that scene alone is what kind of condemned Rico to being released in America as a horror film.
Yeah.
You know, and Cauldron of Death. I mean,
it doesn't even make sense. I mean, there's nothing horror, there's nothing horrific in this film. It's got two kind of gory scenes. The guy getting shot at the very beginning, and this guy getting his cock and balls cut off.
Right. The rest of it's obvious. I mean, it's
the rest of it
movie.
Is a 1970s era action film.
Well, they actually show him melting, too. I mean, that's the thing. When they throw him in the vat, he's melting it with his cock and balls in his mouth.
Yeah, it was creepy. I mean, there's something creepy about organized crime movies to begin with, I think. I've always thought there was something... There's that scene in Goodfellas near the end where they're playing Layla, the sweet part in the beginning. Or the outro, actually. All the piano part, the solo. And they show all the bodies start turning up. Of all these characters, you've learned to know who they are throughout the course of the
little montage where the one guy's frozen solid, takes him weeks to thaw out or something.
Yeah, and they show the guys turning up in the back of garbage trucks and stuff. Yeah. And that scene gave me chills. That was as creepy to me as anything in a horror movie. Because it was a juxtaposition. The music was very sweet. The movie had such a fun feeling, and then all of a sudden it was terribly violent. Like, in a way, you know, I was more attached to the characters in a movie like that than I was to, because I didn't necessarily see their demise coming, you know, from a mile away.
Yeah.
So I could see how somebody might come at it that way, but it's certainly not what to market this as a horror film is just
I know. What's weird too is you have to realize, there was protesting going on when the film was released as Cauldron of Death because of the extreme violence in the film. Now, if it was released as Rico, would there have been protesting? Would people have made such a big deal out of
I think
the
they might have protested that one scene.
I'm sure regardless the cock and balls in the mouth would have gotten some people's heckles up.
Yeah. I just want to say also a big thank you to Dark Sky for re-releasing this film you know, intact.
And that was a recent re-release, wasn't
it? Yeah, it's you know, not that long ago. Of course we get screeners through Horror Hound, and this movie, you know, not exactly able to fit into our forte, but it's great to be able to bring it here and talk about it and how great it is.
And hopefully we'll be able to bring more obscure things and some mainstream. I mean, we definitely, we wanted to talk, originally the plan was to do this in Wanted today, but half of us haven't seen Wanted yet. So I think this, by default, we may end up talking a lot about older features a lot of the time, just because we're trying to stick to kind of like a 30-minute format with a show. But I know coming up we wanted to do an episode about the Conan movies. And oh, yeah. Also,
I'm so in there for that.
Yeah.
I'm there.
That's going to be fun. And I think, you know, other than that, I don't know, is that next week, Mike? Was there anything? Are we putting that? Was that going to be down the road? There was something else we had talked about.
There's a couple things that we've talked. You know, I talked about Remo Williams. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of people that want Chuck Norris in one of the earlier episodes. But I think Conan is a pretty good place to start.
All right.
Yeah.
I also wanted to recommend to anybody who liked Rico, they might also want to check out Taro Ishii's Yakuza's Law and Lucio Fulci's Contraband. They're both pretty much on par with this film as far as violence and over-the-top gangster action.
Yeah. I also recommend a good revenge story that I always like is the comic series 200 Bullets.
Ah, yes. Very good.
My favorite revenge story...
Or 100 Bullets, I'm sorry.
Is it 100?
Yeah, it's, yeah, 100, it's 100 Bullets.
Jeremiah Johnson. One of my favorite revenge stories.
Not sure about that one.
All right.
No? Never
Jeremiah
seen
Jeremiah Johnson?
Yeah. The Sun Also Rises.
The Sun Also Rises. My favorite. I could be thinking of the wrong movie, but I'm pretty sure I'm thinking of Jeremiah Johnson.
Synopsis, please.
Where Robert Redford goes up into the mountains, and I believe his whole family gets killed. He's married to an Indian woman.
I've seen it a long time ago. It's been a long time.
That sounds somewhat familiar.
72. Isn't that the one with the big... he wears the big fur coat like for most of the movie? Yeah. It's been a long time since I've seen
it. My favorite revenge story is Payback.
Yeah. Oh, gosh.
Actually, Payback was pretty good.
I was really surprised. I was reluctant to watch it.
Yeah, I honestly think that Payback is one of the best films Mel Gibson's done.
I think you might be right.
I almost like it better than Lethal Weapon.
For those of you who haven't seen Jeremiah Johnson, that's going to have to be a show down the road then. That's a good one.
Okay.
It's good shit.
Sounds good.
He goes against an entire tribe of Indians who murdered his wife, who was also an Indian.
So it's Walking Tall
in the Old West.
Interesting.
You could say he wants to live off in the mountains alone. It's cool, but we'll get into it
at some point. Straw Dogs.
Yeah, it's a good one too.
Yeah.
It's all good shit. So why don't we all have like a final word on Rico, and then we can wrap this up, and we'll put it up on the old internets.
Ball cutting fun.
Ball cutting fun. Horrific nut clutching terror.
Acid baths, gunfights, shitty 70s go-go music, and gore.
Don't forget boobs.
Yeah,
boobs.
I was going to say.
Lots of boobs.
Good action, better hair, even better titties.
There you have it,
Rico.
Perfect titties.
Find it. Watch it.
Lethal Heat, Force, Impact.
Still has her friends. Oh no. Yeah. She doesn't care whether or not he's an island. They lie. watch. She's got a silk dress and healthy breasts that bounce on his Italian leather sofa. Healthy breasts that bounce on his Italian.